Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03. Congratulations, you made it to Friday afternoon, September 12th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Robot nurses could be AI's answer to the healthcare staffing shortage. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, the weight loss drug boom is reshaping fashion, with more plus-size clothes entering resale and fewer extended sizes in stores, marking a noticeable shift in the size curve. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Bob Fibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this is very interesting because we do have more and more people taking weight loss medications, and those medications are really working. And they are working to such a degree, it is changing the way clothing companies offer sizes. So what does that mean for clothing stores?
Well, they're calling it the Ozempic effect, and this surfaces from a lot of reseller operations who are noticing more and more they are getting these plus size clothes in that they used to have to scrounge for, and this could upend the way that standard sizing has gone in women's clothing in particular, because it's only, I think, Ozempic and those are only in about 10 or 12% of the population now. As that continues to grow, I think it probably will mean less plus size sizes for women.
Now, over the history of retail, how has size changed over the course of the decades to accommodate people who are taller and larger in size? And how much of a backslide are we going to see if the Ozempic effect really takes hold?
Well, that's interesting, because in the 60s and certainly the 70s, 1960s and 1970s, they pretty much had a standard size run, and that was it. And if you were outside of that, if you were much smaller, you were much larger, then you had to pretty much make your own clothes. And so there was a big push, certainly in the last 15 years, to get larger sizes incorporated. So whether that was 3X or 4X or 5 or et cetera, clothing brands popped up that could meet those needs. And certainly for big and tall in men's, and I'm sure for women's. But, you know, part of the interesting aspect to this is Torrid, which is known for plus size sizes, went through and is closing 30% of their stores. So is this the cusp of something that we are going to be witnessing? I think the other side of it is that with so many people losing weight, there are more chances for them to go into stores and get new merchandise. So it's probably going to be a wash as far as the clothing itself. But where that fits in the size category, that's going to be the one to watch.
Is this also a function that of mainstream or just larger clothing brands accepting plus size customers when they did not do so before, and in some cases because they didn't want it to fly in the face of their public image? I mean, there was a time when Abercrombie and Fitch was very pleased to tell a lot of customers that we don't want you here. That was the same case for a couple of other brands, and then the sales went down and they changed their MO. Is that a function of larger clothing stores just accepting more customers of all shapes and sizes?
Well, I think that's a great point, because we hear it in movies and in TV. People want to see themselves in whatever they're consuming. And I think certainly at the mall, you've certainly seen a wealth of sizes in models. And, it's not everybody needs to look this one way as much as understanding that people have different shapes and sizes and embracing all of them. And as we self-select what we can alter about those, it's going to make it harder, I think, for some retailers to adjust. But on the other side, with AI and all the other just-in-time manufacturing, it might be a golden age for personal sizes.
Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Find him online, retaildoctor.com.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
AI technology is advancing so quickly that the prospect of robot nurses on duty helping ease workloads and keep healthcare moving is becoming reality. Joining us to explain is Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show. Thank you for joining us today. And there is a real need for something or someone to alleviate the nursing shortage that not only exists in America, but around the world. So where do the AI nursing robots fit into this particular equation?
Well, you know, it depends on how you define fit in, but it's a great question. And the short answer is where they fit in is where there's huge shortages, as you pointed out, a shortage of roughly 4.5 million nurses globally expected in the next 5 years. And so where they fit in is anybody who's ever, and I hope you are not going to go there soon, but if anybody's ever been to a hospital, either as a patient or visiting one, knows how hard it is to be working in that environment. It is literally an all-night, 24/7 job. It's incredibly taxing, both emotionally and physically. And among other things, just for an easy metric, the nurses are known to walk miles on their shift. Inside a hospital, you know, on top of everything else, they've got to go get medication. They've got to go check with doctors. They've got to go do all kinds of duties. And that all that walk and all that moving and all those responsibilities add up to fatigue. Add to that a shortage, and you got a real need for some help. And robots, in this case, Foxconn, which is well known for making iPhones, partnered with a Japanese robotics company called Kawasaki Heavy Industries, and they're building this Neurobot hardware for a smart AI-driven nurse that essentially recognizes people, understands requests, can do things like go get medication from far off in the hospital and bring it back, and so on. So all of this is, to answer your question, it fits in just about everywhere. The question is, how well will it be received?
Now, anybody who's spent appreciable time in the hospital knows that the nurse, depending on your personal situation, could be a godsend. And the nurse's empathy and their ability to feel what you're feeling or understand what you are feeling is their greatest characteristic above and beyond what they can do to help you as a patient. So will the AI be interacting with patients, or could the AI-powered robots take care of other functions so the nurse could spend more time with patients?
That's a great question, because it is absolutely, it's been documented that the stats are clear. Human beings respond better when human beings are around if they are in a traumatic situation like being in the hospital. Even if that trauma is minor, the point is that their reaction, the patient's reaction and the outcomes, which is obviously what all this is being judged by, are patients getting better? Do they respond well to robots versus nurses versus human beings? And the short answer is, it's quite obvious that most human beings respond better to another human being. However, what you were implying earlier is really important. A large percentage of a nurse's duties, and you're absolutely right, they are the centerpiece of good care in almost every hospital. But a huge percentage of their duties is walking around and getting stuff. And it is absolutely, of course, also responding to patient needs. But if those sort of, well, for lack of a better phrase, robotic needs can be helped or taken care of by a robot, then it's a huge step forward. Now, remember, this is a giant industry. Healthcare globally is a $9.8 trillion healthcare market. And roughly, the smart hospital sector within that is at about $72 or $73 billion this year. So the point is that there's a lot of need, a huge market. The question is this going to help patients get better? Answer, we sure hope so.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor of the Today Show based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, re-entering the workforce after taking time off to be a caregiver.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Caregiving may pull people out of the workforce, but the skills gained, empathy, crisis management, adaptability, can strengthen resumes and spark new careers rather than hurt them. Welcome in Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And this is especially well-timed because it was this week, I think, I came across a post on LinkedIn by a hiring manager who said one of their most recent hires was someone who took time off for a couple of years to take care of an ailing relative and hired that person for these skills that we talked about in the introduction. But you have to meet the right sort in order to make that work.
Yes, absolutely. You know, with it being a candidate short market over the last couple of years, more and more employers have turned to more skills-based hiring and covering all of the, you know, somewhat soft skills that you mentioned in your opening is a great place to start when looking for the right person.
Now, if you've taken some time off to care for an ailing relative or the kids are out of the house and you want to jump back into the workforce and you have a gap of a couple of years and you want to put caregiver on the resume, how do you do it? And how do you do it in such a way that it helps you float to the top?
Well, I think you just need to sit down and think about all the things you were responsible for as a caregiver. You know, as you said, like problem solving, research, you know, sometimes even negotiation skills, you know, with insurance agencies, and empathy, even, you know, so important nowadays, thinking about how to convey that. And, you know, you can oftentimes work with a recruiter to help pull through those skills on a resume to make that show. You know, I think the key thing is you want to be transparent about those things. I think sometimes people are really scared about those skills gaps. They don't know how to explain them. Sometimes they try to hide them. But, you know, to me, that transparency is always more admirable than simply leaving that, you know, blank spot on your resume.
And especially in this day and age where everyone's trying to figure out what they can do in their skill set that cannot be replicated by AI, skills such as negotiation and empathy that you pick up just as part of being a caregiver, the AI can't fake that, and chances are it never will.
1,000%. And those are skills that our employers are looking for nowadays, those soft skills that often make you really stand out from the rest. So, you know, don't be ashamed of them, share them, and, you know, think about, especially caregivers, healthcare is one of the hottest hiring industries nowadays, and there are so many different roles available in healthcare that you can take those skills as a caregiver and apply them to multiple positions in a very hot industry.
And this is also a situation in which networking is no doubt paramount, because you probably can't make that sale if you're just blankly responding to applications you see on job sites. But if there's someone in your network or in your life who just knows how hard you're working as a caregiver, that's going to make an impression.
So true. You know, the who you know always comes through strong when looking for opportunities, applying for jobs. Like you said, ask for those recommendations, whether it's a colleague, a former manager, a family member that knows something. Consider contract work as a way to ease yourself back into the industry, right? Sometimes just getting a few contract jobs under your belt coupled with those soft skills will help you land the right position. But absolutely use every resource available to you. What you did was admirable, and I will tell you, some company will be really happy and proud to hire you for it.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, a businessman whose mission is to spread deli goodness everywhere.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready.
maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets are mixed today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like Tesla is driving the gains in the NASDAQ, no pun intended.
Well, first off, happy Friday. Thanks for having me back. And there's a little pun intended there. I like that. Yes, you know, we're kind of a really solid week. S&P up 1.7%. Tesla's up, what, over 5 or 6% approximately, having a great day, obviously leading kind of the technology in the Mag 7 areas. I mean, the reality, though, this is a bull market. The baton kind of gets passed around. Today it's Tesla and some of the large cap tech that's doing a little bit better, with the NASDAQ hitting all-time highs. But just last week we were talking about small caps that were doing well. So this is a global bull market. And, you know, we're still pretty optimistic here. It's going to keep going higher.
And then you pointed out on social media this week that the bull market that we have been discussing recently celebrated an anniversary.
Well, that's right. It'll actually turn three a month from today, actually. A month from today, it'll officially be 3 years old. Remember, October 12, 2022, that vicious bear market ended. And here's what I think all listeners need to know. I looked at all the bull markets the last 50 years that made it this point, up to this point in life, a three. They lasted an average of 8 years. The shortest, Rob, was 5 years. So, listen, nobody knows how long this bull market could go, to be very clear. But if you look back at history, I see it's like a cruise ship. Once a cruise ship gets going, it's hard to slow down, hard to stop, really hard to turn around. Bull markets are like that. And one more quick one here. The third-year bull markets usually are choppy or frustrating. Does that sound familiar? We had a near-bear market, you know, this time 5 months ago. So, again, there's just another reason to think market caught its breath the third year of this bull market. And there's still probably a lot left in the tank, in our opinion.
The Fed will cut interest rates next week. It's no longer an if. Yep. You can pretty much hang your hat on it. Has the market already priced in that interest rate cut? How will it react to a quarter point cut, mm-hmm. or if the Fed surprises and walks down the stairs with a half a percentage point?
Yeah, it's obvious. I mean, we're up, I think, 5 out of the last 6 weeks, 24 all-time highs on the S&P 500, obviously up about 5 months in a row, potentially. So clearly some of that is being priced in. I mean, what was it, 2 weeks ago today or 3 weeks ago today when Powell came out much more dovish at Jackson Hole, hinting this cut was coming. That's why so much of this rally has taken place. The reality, though, is with the weakening labor market, yeah, inflation's not perfect. A lot of people think, you know, we're getting higher inflation because of the tariffs, those are goods, some of the inflation data this week was a little bit better than we were fearful of. Another reason we rallied. But to answer your question, I think, you know, we get 25 basis points is what the market is expecting here. I think 50 might upset things, and maybe it's like, oh, the Fed's a little bit more worried. I've always kind of grown up, bad news is bad news, and we are seeing some weakening labor market, and the market's excited is the right word to use, but hopeful of some interest rate cuts to kind of keep that going. But I think we get 25 three times the rest of this year, the next three meetings, and that's what's being priced in right here.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, we look at the secret ingredient behind a suburban Jewish-style deli that's a fan favorite in the western suburbs.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and today we meet the man who took the helm and guided a Jewish-style deli favorite through the pandemic and grew its reputation as one of the western suburbs' best. We welcome in Mark Goodman, owner and CEO of Schmaltz Deli, 3011 Ogden Avenue in Lyle. Mark, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Now, today is September. Today is September 12th, Mark. 5 days from today is the literal halfway to St. Patrick's Day. It's not the White Sox promotion, which is a week from tomorrow. It is it's September 17th. You have 6 months left to go, yep, until St. Patrick's Day of 2026. And how do you prepare for that big celebration of corned beef in which Schmaltz Deli is front and center?
Well, we've done it so many times that at this point, it doesn't take us a whole lot of additional preparation until about a month before. Our suppliers, we let them know the quantity we're going to need, and we work with those vendors, and we start gearing up staff. And I send plane tickets to family members and contact old employees who want to come in for the day. because it is a memorable day, that's for sure.
Now, speaking as someone who is a huge fan of pastrami and a huge fan of corned beef, how do you move the needle? How do you bring customers in when it's not St. Patrick's Day, when it's just a regular Friday in September? How do you just keep the business prominent and front and center 365 days out of the year?
You have to stay true to your brand and your quality. You know, there's so much competition out there. There's so much pricing pressure on everyone. But you've got to be known for something that is going to be consistent, that when they walk in, they know what they're going to get. So we really, we stay close to the traditional items. We haven't changed our recipes. We do change occasionally our cuts of things to make them better, to make them more traditional. But really the key is staying close to your brand. And so that people know that when they walk in your door, they know that the kind of treatment they're going to get from a customer service standpoint, and they know the quality they're going to get. Because if not, they're going to be real disappointed.
Now, you have been talking about pricing pressure, and one of the big areas of pressure these days has been in the price of beef. And even though brisket is kind of a tougher cut of meat, if not prepared correctly, how do you deal with that type of input cost?
That's an interesting question. And pricing has gone up dramatically. It's up 25% at least in the last 6 months. What we've done is we've changed the pricing model a little bit. We went from an overstuffed and an understuffed situation where we called our sandwiches to a perfectly stuffed. And what allowed us to do is bring down the prices of our larger sandwiches. And then we've also offer now a New York size, which makes them just like you'd expect to see at Katz and some of the other delicatessens. And if you want that kind of sandwich, you can pay a little bit more for it. But you can't play with the quality, but you have to do what you can to mitigate that, and you can't pass it on to your customers.
Now, at the same time, though, pricing pressure aside, Schmaltz's, because it is such a local favorite, that does seem like a treat-yourself kind of place, that you may want to look for the better deal elsewhere, but you feel that the experience you get at a place like Schmaltz's is worth it.
We sure hope so. There's no question that there is a cheaper places to get a sandwich, but we don't think it's packed as well. We don't think the meat quality is as good. We don't have nitrates. We do a lot of our own special recipes and cooking in-house. And we do feel like we're a special place. And if you want a traditional New York-style or Jewish corned beef sandwich, pastrami sandwich with a navel-cut pastrami, we're the place to come.
Mark Goodman, owner and CEO of Schmaltz Deli at 3011 Ogden Avenue in Lisle. Thank you for joining us on Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come, coffee prices haven't surged this quickly since the 90s, and we'll explain why.
It's lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Coffee prices are on the rise, experiencing their biggest surge since the 90s as Trump administration tariffs on Brazil and other exporters hit U.S. imports. Let's bring on Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, thank you for joining us today. And how does this run-up in coffee prices stack up compared to that 90s surge? And what are companies in America doing to mitigate the blow for customers?
Well, Rob, what we've seen is a lot of companies really exporting to the U.S. in advance of the tariffs. Now, keep in mind that we can't just blame the tariffs for this. On September 8th, there was an executive order that rescinded the tariff on coffee and a lot of other products that can't be grown here in the U.S. So if we look at Brazil in particular, the problem is that, first of all, they had a frost that about 2021 that destroyed a lot of the crops, and they also now are having its worst drought in 70 years, and that's reduced the yield by, you know, about 12-13%. So that's what's really driving up the price of coffee, and we get about a third of our coffee from Brazil.
And so what does this mean for your local coffee shop, or when you walk through the coffee aisle at the grocery store? What are the companies that sell coffee to you? What can they do about it above and beyond just passing along the extra cost to the customer?
Well, a couple things are happening. One is we're seeing shrinkflation where they're putting less coffee in the same size can. That's number one, or in the same size bag. Number two is we're seeing some of the brands moving from Arabica coffee, which is the best coffee, to Robusta. Now, Robusta comes primarily from Vietnam, and that has sticks and twigs in it, so that's a lot less expensive. So I think what we're going to see is we're going to see these coffee shops switching their blends and downgrading. Now, Starbucks has not yet announced that they're going to go up in price, but Starbucks have seen their sales declining for the past few years. 7% a year ago. This year, it's down between 1 and 4%, depending on what part of the country you're in. But Starbucks, at the end of this month, are introducing something new that's going to cost us even more, which is they're having protein lattes and protein cold foam. So while you might be spending $6 or $7 for a latte now, if you want to add more protein to it, it's probably going to cost you another couple bucks. So that's where I think, you know, Starbucks is not going to increase their price at all, but they're going to look for these other things as ways to make up that difference.
Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us today.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.